For Lee and Jim at Lyman Ag Supply and Lyman and the Family Vision Center in downtown Atlantic, this is Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, the Conservation Officer for Cass and Adair Counties. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning, Bob.
It's kind of fun to be able to introduce somebody with only one title when I'm dealing with Brian. He's got so many hats on, it's a little hard to tell what he might be, and it gets a little confusing.
It does.
I'm comfortable with it.
That's why he carries four or five phones around with him, too, I guess.
So. Yeah, I think. I don't know how he manages to get that done. Hey, we got a lot of things going on. Things are opening up, and things are starting to happen pretty quick. I don't know where we want to go first. Let's go with the pheasant season. That opens, the youth opens as we speak, 8 o'clock this morning.
That's right. We've got the youth pheasant season this weekend, which is, we've got several different youth seasons in Iowa, and many other states are also going that route. But, you know, it's a great weekend where you can take the kids out and they can try their hand at pheasant hunting, maybe show them how, you know, pointing dogs or dogs are involved in the sport. But, yeah, it's one of those things that we encourage folks to take their kids out if they have the chance. Hopefully the weather is good. It looks like it's going to be a fairly decent weekend for it. Some of the opening weekends we've had here as of late have been either windy or you know, the opening season for early muzzleloader last weekend was foggy and drizzly. So hopefully the youth pheasant season will be just a little bit better for them, and they'll have a chance to get out there and hopefully harvest their first pheasant.
You bet. That's always a major accomplishment. I can remember my first, and I imagine you can too. Brings back a lot of memories.
I can, and I'm excited for to hopefully get my first Iowa pheasant here in the upcoming regular season. So
get some of these good corn-fed ones instead of those ones been down there eating hickory.
That's right. Acorns. Yeah, they're a little scrawny down there, but you know, I talked about the weather last weekend, but you know, I was out both mornings fairly early, and it was pretty neat to see several pheasants out standing in the gravel roads because of course it was wet everywhere else, but they were standing out there trying to dry off, and you know, the guy I was working with, we both commented, you know, where you run into the good habitat, we seen pheasants. Uh-huh. And where there wasn't very good habitat, we didn't see much of anything. So it just kind of goes to show that where you've got, you know, good CRP or good habitat for the birds, they're going to be there, especially this year.
Mm-hmm. I've bored people many times before with the experiment I did. They've always said you can't shoot out a good cover. You know, that can't be done. And
that's
I
right.
thought, oh, baloney. So there was a place not too far from town, and I exclusively hunted roosters out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And many other people did, too. And the last day of the season, I walked out there, and within 45 minutes, had a limit of pheasants out of that. So if you got the cover, the birds will be there.
You bet, especially when the weather gets bad. They tend to go to it. So it's very important, especially late in the year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the kids today, they got to limit themselves to one bird. Of course, next Saturday, the all-out season opens up, and our big problem there is going to be a lot of crops in the field yet, probably.
There will be, but, you know, as we speak, they're getting the fields out and shelling corn, and, yeah, that's going to be probably the biggest challenge is there's going to be some fields still out, especially where you've got good habitat. You know, when they've got a good place like a cornfield to escape to, it's going to make hunting especially tough, but you know, the season will only get better as it goes on, I suspect. And again, weather's going to be key. And yeah, it's definitely going to be a good time because we've got some really good predictions for pheasant and quail numbers this year. So look forward to a real successful hunt, especially when the conditions are right.
If the birds fly to the standing corn, you might as well kiss them goodbye, because with the narrow rows and the high populations, I don't think a rabbit can run crossways. Of course, the rows are so close together, so going out and walking through would be impossible, almost.
You betcha, especially when the corn's 8 or 10 feet tall in some fields still.
You bet. Let's talk a little bit about waterfowl. That gets going also.
It does. We've got part of the state's already open, but this weekend the south zone actually opens up here in Iowa. So I know a lot of waterfowl hunters are looking forward to that. And that season's going to run from October 22nd, which is this Saturday, all the way through December 15th. So there'll be plenty of opportunities for folks to get out and do some duck and goose hunting. Hopefully, you know, they again get a chance to take a kid out. And the first part of the season is going to be you know, the weather is never really quite good for duck season just yet when it's still 60s and 70s during the day. But again, as the weather progresses and the season gets longer, we're going to see some really good hunts. So you're not gonna kill any sitting at home. So you need to get out there and get after them.
That's for sure. And when it happens this year, since we're getting pretty late, and if the weather does make an abrupt change, you better have a little vacation time spared, because you've got to be in the field when the birds are on the move.
You bet. And that's one of the neat things about waterfowl hunting, I think, is that, you know, one day it can be pretty gloom and there's not much going on, and then a front comes in, and literally overnight the hunting conditions can change, and you can go from seeing very few waterfowl to, you know, having ducks everywhere. And that's one thing that I've always enjoyed about the sport, is just the unpredictability about it. And, you know, even hunting conditions can change within a day's time. You know, you can see you've got a strong north wind or a front up north of us, you'll see birds pushing through all day long. So it's a pretty neat phenomenon that waterfowl go through.
You bet. Populations are pretty good. The ducks and geese, ducks in particular, are pretty healthy.
They are, and we've seen that trend kind of for the last several years. We've had some good nesting conditions. We've still got some good areas up north where we're producing ducks, but of course mallards are kind of our big species of waterfowl here in North America, and their populations are looking really well. We had some good predictions for teal. Unfortunately, the weather didn't cooperate with us here in the state, but there's not much we can do about that. But, you know, I would expect to see some of the green-winged teal still trickling through. A lot of times they tend to be a later migrant as compared to their cousin, the blue-winged teal. So, yeah, there's going to be a good forecast is in store for us. Of course, we've got lots of geese all over the state and lots of resident geese. So, yeah, it's going to be, I hope it turns out to be a good season, especially if the, you know, they're kind of predicting a nasty winter for us. So if that's the case, we could see some really good waterfowl hunting.
You bet. What's the situation water-wise at Riverton and Forney? Have you talked to the boy down there and see what's going on?
I haven't, but I'm going to be down there before too long, so I'll give you a first-hand account of it here soon. But, you know, we've had plenty of rain, and I would suspect that they've probably got the marshes pretty well full of water, which is good, because early on in the season, when you've got some of your moist season plants like smartweed and things like that, things that waterfowl really prefer, it's going to be a good time for the ducks to get in there and get to them before they're picked through, you know, throughout the season by the flocks that migrate through. So, yeah, we should have good conditions down there. Expect to see lots of ducks, and you know, the opening weekend's always good, because you get a lot of those what we call dumb ducks. They haven't had any hunting pressure yet, especially right here. So especially if they're juvenile birds, they can really, you know, give you a good hunt. And you know, that won't be the case later on, as ducks have been here for some time and they get educated on the game. So opening weekend is always a big hit among people.
You bet. Let's change gears a little bit and talk about deer hunting. Nothing much going on except the muzzleloader. You said opened last weekend. That fog was down to about 200-300 feet there for a while in the morning. But was there some people out after the fog lifted some?
There were a few people. Of course, I probably drove by a lot of people that I didn't see, because the fog was just so bad. And, you know, the conditions just really weren't great. A lot of drizzly, misty rain in both mornings, actually. And so the weather could have been a little bit better, but not much we can do about that. But there were some folks who were out there seeing a few deer had been called in or registered for the early muzzleloader portion. So, yeah, there's going to be some folks out there. Bow hunting is really starting to pick up as well. And so that's we've got the rut's going to be here, you know, before too long. And, you know, if you've had any time, if you've been driving at all after dark, you're starting to see the deer are really increasing, and they're really starting to be on their feet after dark. So, again, just use extra caution when you're driving anywhere, especially with the combines in the fields and they're pushing deer all over. So it's a time of the year when you need to be on your toes when you're driving, you know, whether it's dark or not dark. I seen one run across I-80 the other day, and he avoided several vehicles somehow, but it just goes to show that, you know, especially the bucks are going to be on their feet here soon, and they're going to be running all over, so pay attention.
Yeah, they can, they'll hit you in the front side or almost the back. They just have no sense at all about what's going on.
They can. There's one other thing I wanted to point out about deer season, Bob, real quick, is I wanted to kind of take people through the process of how to register your deer after you have a successful hunt.
Very good, you bet.
And, you know, this is something that, quite honestly, the compliance with this is somewhat low at times. People don't really pay attention to this. They don't think it's a big deal, but it is a big deal that you call in and check your and register your deer, because this is how we, you know, judge the harvest totals. This is how we set season quotas for the following year. So this is it's very important, and of course it's a legal requirement. You must do it. So if you do harvest a deer, you have until midnight the following day to get that deer checked in. And just look at your deer tag. There's an 800 number on there that you can call to get the deer checked in. They're going to ask you a series of questions like, you know, what county it was killed in, what was the sex of the deer, things like that. So there's a lot of information right there on the tag. And then deer hunters will notice that on the bottom of their tag, there's a series of numbers and a series of letters. And that is for, you're supposed to invalidate the tag immediately after harvesting the deer. So you pull out a pocket knife and you mark the date of the month it was killed in, and then also the month itself is going to be notched on there as well, and then you have to place that tag on the deer itself, mm-hmm. the transportation portion. And this is something that we see folks a little bit lax on at times too. That tag has to be placed on that deer within 15 minutes of you finding it or before it's transported anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're kind of sticklers on that is because we don't know if your intention is to get that deer thrown in the back of a truck and get it back to the house and go back out on that same tag. So that's right. Why it's a really important requirement. But again, make sure that you're registering your deer. It's a really important step in the process. And, you know, it's something that I run into several people here lately who just haven't done it. And it's something that, you know, we expect of people because we need to know how many deer are being taken in the state. So
you bet. Oh, that's a great tool for the biologist, if nothing else.
It really is.
There's enough deer hunting that you don't have to do it illegal.
You betcha.
You can do it other ways. Let's talk about a guy that shot himself in the foot, so to speak. Boy up at Fort Dodge. He's the last of 10 that finally settled up with the government on a poaching deal. And give us a rundown on how that came about, how he got caught.
Well, I don't know a great deal about the case, but I do know the officer who was involved in it. And it was something just as simple as when you put your information on the internet, guess what? The whole world knows about it. And, you know, that's one of the things we see about people who become so consumed about the sport and the bragging aspect of it and putting your pictures online and filming your hunts. When you do those sorts of things, which there's nothing wrong with, you know, being proud of your sport, but you probably ought to be legal before you put it on the internet,
really,
you know.
Should.
And, you know, if you're not, and in some of the particulars of this case, we've seen some issues with non-residents using resident deer tags. We've seen a lot of tag swapping going on and just a whole variety of other violations that kind of spawned out of just a few guys putting things on a TV show. So, you know, if again, nothing wrong with I like watching hunting shows just as much as the next guy, but you know, let's make sure that we're doing it legal and by the books, because if not, there's a lot of eyes out there for the whole world to be seeing that, and you can expect there's probably going to be some issues if you're not following the rules like everyone else is expected to. So yeah, it just kind of goes to show that sometimes pride takes over and you kind of kind of get wrapped up in the whole antler craze, unfortunately.
You start and thinking you're 9 foot tall and bulletproof.
That's right.
You bet. This guy was a kind of a professional guide and kind of a filmmaker, and He got nailed for $1,902 in fines and $4,000 in restitution, but he took nine guys down with him that showed up on these films. So
yeah, there was a lot of others that were fined in the process and had some other issues as well. But yeah, you know, that just goes to show I came from a state where the fines were really low, and I'm happy to see that Iowa, and it just goes to show that Iowa take their hunting laws a little bit more serious than some places, because we've got the restitution where, you know, if you or the civil penalties, if you kill a deer and it's illegal, you know, you could be fined anywhere from $1,500 to $20,000. And we've had several cases of poached deer costing upwards of $20,000. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of money. I don't know about you, but I don't have that in my wallet. So that goes to show it hopefully is a deterrent in what, you know, makes people think before they go out there and poach.
Okay. We need to talk safety, but we're out of town. That's a big thing, Willie, is just be safe and use your head, and don't be doing things wrong.
That's right, and we'll talk about safety in the coming shows for sure, because deer season, that's a hot topic, and, you know, we're going to preach about it because we don't want to see people get involved in hunting accidents, and, you know, a little common sense goes a long way in that regard.
You bet. For the Lyman Ag Supply Company in downtown Lyman and the Family Vision Center in Atlantic, this is Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly on this morning's Conservation Report.